by the hand tell me to be a little bit more clear. And I will try to explain what I'm trying to say. So tonight I'm going to talk about recent work I've been doing in Oxford with Dr. Washworth on the social brain. So I'm a neuroscientist, so the kind of question I'm interested in deals with how the brain is organized and how the brain works. So it's kind of like a what kind of question. So I'm interested in trying to understand how the brain evolves, like from monkey brain to human brain, and try to understand what were the pressure that forced this evolution. Unfortunately, I'm not an expert, so if you have any why question, please accept my apologies that I may not have an answer for that. So since I arrived in Oxford, I've been interested in social cognition. So social cognition could be defined as has been defined by Thera Shuttleworth as the all the processes that are specific to knowing and acting on information about social companion. And what my work is about is trying to understand the neural basis of these processes. So where it happens in the brain, what are, and how the different brain regions are interacting to make to make our social interaction possible. So it's already the end for the suspense. There are some brain region, there are some brain area that seems to be more excited when we are involved in social interaction. So this area are represented on this lateral view of the brain. So it's so here on the along the temporal cortex. So here are represented on this colored brain the different parts of the brain. So I'm going to use some terms like temporal lobes, which means this kind of green areas, and this is this kind of line here, and it goes up to the parietal cortex. So that's this red area, and a lot of the area that are also active when we are involved in social interaction are in the frontal lobe. So that's all these areas here. So they are in this blue part of the brain.
That's the front, right?
Is that the frontal part? Yeah. So here it's a lateral view of the brain. So that's this hemisphere. And here this is a medial view. So we've got two hemispheres and we are looking from the midline. And there are some area also that are also more active when we are involved in when we have to process some social information. So for instance, this area here called the medial prefrontal cortex and this area here, temporal parietal junction, so it means just that it's at the interaction of these red and green areas. They are more active when we are trying to think what others are thinking. So for this is an example of literature. This is the kind of task people are asked to perform. So you've got two characters. The first character, Sally, she puts the ball in the bucket, and then she left. And while she is away, the second character, Anna, she takes the ball from the bucket and puts that in the box. When Sally comes back, where do you think she will look for the ball? In the bucket? In the box? Yeah, exactly. And you're able to do that because you're able to attribute a belief to Sally. You think, you know that the ball is in the box, but you know that she doesn't know it. And when you're thinking like that, this brain region and this brain region are more active.
So you mean that us thinking about what she would do is making our brains active in those
areas? Exactly. Well, this is a process called theory of mind. You're attributing beliefs and thoughts to other people. So this is kind of, yeah, this is crucial when we are, because we are kind of, as a primate, we are a very, very much a social creature. And so to have the machinery that is able to deal with this kind of information is very important for our daily life. But it has been suggested that it was also important from an evolutionary perspective. Indeed, it has been proposed that it's the increase in the size of the primate brain, so from is associated with the fact, with the needs related to living, with the demands related to living in social groups. So on this graphics, on the y-axis, you've got the mean group size. So how many, in that case, it's how many monkeys you are living with. And on that axis is the relative size of the neocortex. So the relative size of this blue, red, green, and yellow area together compared to the size of this little orange area. So what it says is like the more complex your social environment is, the bigger your brain is. And size matters not only from an evolutionary perspective, but you could also observe differences when you are comparing individuals. And this is, for instance, the result of a recent and very nice experiment in which the authors show that these red regions, they show that the more friends you have, the bigger those red regions are. And you can... And the fact, it could be meaningful that brain region is bigger. For instance, this other experiment, the author showed that the size of the orbital frontal cortex, so it's a region that is likely to, that is kind of around this area, this red area. So the larger this area is, the better you are at understanding, at understanding the relationship of characters from stories you just read. And this is evaluated with this kind of score. But basically, the more complex interaction they are between people and the bigger your this region is, the better you are at doing it. What is not known from those studies is whether you've got a big brain because you've got many friends, whether you got many friends because your brain is bigger. And that's the question we addressed recently with my colleagues. And so our question was, could the social environment have an impact on the brain? And to check that, we did an experiment with monkeys that are living in a research colony. So we did that with monkey because with monkey you can control the social environment. So the monkey arrived in the research colony, and then they are assigned to a research group and to different research projects. So basically, their social network is reorganized. And after a while, the animal was scanned. So if there was any correlation, any link between the size of the social network and the size of some of brain regions, then it means that there is a causal effect. So it means that the environment could cause changes in our brain, could induce plasticity in the brain of adult monkeys.
Could I just ask a very clarification on something? These regions of the brain, how do you define them? It's presumably not morphologically, is it from MRI or something?
Those regions? The red ones or anything? That region could be defined on their, based on cytoarchitectural properties, so how they are built, so how they, how many, the type of cell they are constituted of, this kind of information, some chemical properties or anything. They could also be defined based on their location. So here, so anything that will fall in this kind of green blob will be called the temporal area because it's on the side of the brain, so temporal. Anything that is...
When you say something is going to be bigger, because as you're saying, interactions, does that mean... What I'm getting at is how can you tell... that more of the brain isn't being used for this function instead of is it growing?
It's kind of growing, but it's not like growing immensely. So your head will not be deformed by the fact it's growing. It's
just
tiny.
More cells? Or?
You could. That's okay. I can
I can try to answer that later, but yeah, there are several hypotheses related to these kind of gray matter changes, and I will. It's on a later slide. So. So we did scan monkeys. So here I'm just giving you the recipe for a scan. So what I mean by scanning. So scanning means you take a subject. It could be a human subject as well, and you put the subject into a scanner, which is in fact a very powerful magnet. Then you start transmitting radio waves, and then you stop transmitting, and the object that is in the scanner will retransmit the radio waves back. And that's the signal you are trying to record. And you do that a couple of times. And after a while, then you're able to reconstruct an image of the brain. And once you're done, then you can let the subject go and start analyzing your data. When we did this analysis, we had some kind of a priori area of interest. Those brain regions we were thinking of were the brain regions that are part of what I call the social brain. So this is the brain region I showed you earlier. So the frontal cortex, the temporal cortex on the side. And another set of brain regions that are associated with the mirror neuron theory. So this mirror neuron theory is related to the fact that there are some, like at least in these regions, like called premotor regions, just at the back of the frontal cortex, and here it's the parietal cortex, that was the red bit just before. In these two regions, you've got neurons that are active when you are performing an action, let's say grabbing a glass of wine, but these neurons will be also active if Rachel is trying to grab the glass of wine. And the author claimed that this is very important for understanding author's intention. So basically, there are kind of two ideas behind like this kind of social brain theory and this mirror neuron theory that are both trying to explain the neural basis of social cognition. And when we did analyze our data, what we observed is that in the brain, so these are different sections different images of a macaque brain, and in yellow orange, that's the yellow orange bits represent where in the brain we observed a gray matter changes in correlation with the number of with the social network size of the animals. This is also represented on the graphic on the side. So basically, this is the number of monkeys you are living with, and this kind of reflect the size of the area. So you can see that the more monkey you are living with, the bigger the area is. And this is happening here, which is here. This is the temporal cortex again, and this is also happening here. I don't know if you can see it very much, which is the frontal cortex. It means this is happening in this part of the brain, the anterior prefrontal cortex, and this part of the brain, the temporal cortex. So we are observing effects in the macaque brain where people say that we should observe something in the human brain. So it's like in the macaque brain, there is already a platform like on which the evolution has built up our social brain. Okay, sorry. So then the next question we ask is whether it has an impact on the macaque social life. What does it mean for the macaque to have a bigger brain, bigger STS, a bigger temporal cortex or a bigger frontal cortex? So for
What's on the y-axis of your graph?
here. It's called Jacobian determinant. It's the way we measure the changes in the gray matter. I can show you. You ask for the technique. it's somewhere there. So that's how we did the experiment. So when you so we collected data for 23 monkeys. So each of these images is a different brain. It's an individual brain. And then we kind of normalized the data. And we ended up with the average brain for this 23 monkey. And
is that in terms of cell type or connections?
It's in terms of... that's the structural of the of the brain, so it's not cell type,
okay.
It's different type of tissue.
Okay.
So in gray, it's called gray matter. That's where the neurons are in the brain. And it's in white, it's white matter. That's pretty. And it's just the connect, it represents the connection between the different areas. So this is images. So if you're familiar with a digital camera or if you have a computer, sometimes you see that images is made out of little square. That's be called pixel, and because we are, it's an object we are scanning. Instead of working with pixel, we are working with volumetric pixels or voxel or little cubes. and thanks to some mathematical tools, we are able to go from this kind of average brain back to each individual brain. And the what was on the y-axis is called Jacobian determinant. Is the it represents how much you have to extend or shrink this little voxel to go from this template to each individual one. And it represents how much a brain has, and if it correlates with social network size as it did in our experiment, in fact it reflects how much the brain has been changed because you have been living with many friends.
What are you measuring, actually?
The
density of the... This is an MRI scan.
This is an MRI scan, yes.
But I don't understand. What are you actually measuring?
We are measuring...
Blood flow.
No, it's not blood flow. It's... it's not kind of nothing in that case. It's a kind of an analysis trick. You kind of decomposed the images into little voxels, and you try to make those little cubes to match with this average template. And there is, and because there is not much dissimilarities in between animals, you can have a perfect match between this individual brain and your group brain, and your average brain. And what we are measuring is simply how much. How much you have to distort the images. And how much you have to distort the images reflects how much the brain has changed, growth.
Can I ask,
what?
When you said the brain retransmits the radio waves back,
yeah.
Do gray and white matter retransmit differently?
Yeah, that's why you can see gray
and
white.
That's what you're measuring. It's the difference between gray and white matter, isn't it?
You're measuring the frequency, different frequency, because different chemical composition.
So.
That's
MRI. But that's how we got the images.
Mm.
The analysis trick we used is not measuring anything specific. The way we did the analysis, we know that the effect is related to changes in volume in gray matter. But that's, okay, that's, maybe I can just... So what we know is that there are some volumetric changes in the brain, and there are several hypotheses related to these changes, what they are reflecting from from a biological perspective. They could reflect the fact that, for instance, you've got this are connection between two areas, represented by these wires. And because in that case,
the animal was trained to use a tool, then you've got an extension of these connections.
That's one possibility. Other possibility are there are more cells. So we observe these changes in gray matter because there are more cells, because you've got more vascular vessels, because you've got more glial cells. Those are the cells that are helping the neurons to work. So all those hypotheses, all those ideas are right. But because we are doing MRI, so I cannot really answer your question. So here on this graphic, I represent kind of the limitation of our study, the limitation of all the techniques in cognitive neuroscience. So on this y-axis, you've got the spatial resolution each technique can give you, and on this x-axis is the temporal resolution of each technique. So we did fMRI, an fMRI experiment, so the limitation of this analysis is kind of the millimeter. Anything, any effect that is below the millimeter, we will not be able to tell you what's happening. So we know that something happened, but we cannot tell what happened. So that's why you have got other techniques that will be helpful, and you can go to the neural level or to the dendrite levels. And all those techniques are in fact complementary because they are telling different things about the brain. So to answer your question, in fact, there is a recent experiment that has been, an elegant recent experiment that has been done by a Chinese group. Their technique is at the level of the synaptic button, so way below the millimeter.
Can you just explain what a synapse is?
The synapse is the connection. It's how two neurons are connected. You've got one neuron here, and it's the action potential for the electric message arrives here, and here it's elicit the liberation of neurotransmitter that are captured again, that are captured by another neurons. That's how neurons talk to each other. What they found is that the more receptor, one specific type of receptor, but the more receptor they are on the neurons, the higher the amplitude of the action potential is modulated in this second neuron. So this is nothing to do with the information that is coming in, it's the way the information is translated at that level. So the more receptor you have, they have higher the amplitude of the next action potential. And they also found a correlation between the social dominance of the social status of the animal and the amplitude of this action potential. So if you are a subordinate, then you will have few receptor to translate the information. If you are dominant, then you have more receptors.
Is that general or specifically in the social area?
It's because they worked only on the medial prefrontal cortex. Sorry. So it's specific to the medial prefrontal cortex of the mice, and it's more. And the clever experiment they did is they tried to promote the expression of receptor in the subordinate mice or to inhibit the expression of the receptor in the dominant mice. And what they have been able to do is to reverse the social status of the animals using in a behavioral task. So the effect we observed in our experiments in monkeys might be related to changes in the strengths of the synapse of our animals. Is it clear, or are you completely lost? So the effect we found in the monkeys in relation to the size of their social network. So we tried to understand whether it was. How could it be meaningful for the animal social life? Is there any could it tell us something about how successful a monkey is in his social life? So in a subgroup of animals, for which we knew
the social status of the animals, we ran the analysis again, but this time instead of looking for any correlation between the site of the social network and gray matter changes, we look for correlation between the social status and gray matter changes. And what we found up is just here. We found in the prefrontal cortex a tiny overlap, but it's an overlap in the prefrontal cortex and in the temporal cortex, meaning that this gray matter changing may mean something for the animal. It may tell you how successful an animal could be. So because of this increased gray matter volume in the temporal cortex and in the frontal cortex. What's the other information that is given by this study is related to the fact that these second neurons, they are located in a specific layers that is supposed to send information to the rest of the brain. So basically, it's the message that is going from the medial prefrontal cortex to the rest of the brain that is altered. And so if this information is true, then in our study, we should have observed not only changes in gray matter, changes in gray matter in different regions, but we should have observed some changes in the way these different regions are talking to each other. And this could be achieved by doing some functional MRI. So the animal is still in the scanner, but this time we are interested in the Bolt signal. It means how well oxygenated the tissue is. The idea is like the more active an area is, the more oxygen the area will need to work, and so the higher the MRI signal will be. So for instance, here I present you two examples. So this is this is the blue region, and this is the signal you can record from the blue region, the Bolt signal you can record from the blue region. And this is the green region and the signal. And when we are talking about, then we are looking at how the rest of the brain, how the different voxel of the rest of the brain, the different little cubes of the signal in the other cubes, correlates with the signal. And this is the result presented here. So you can see that different regions of the brain talk to, they've got some kind of specific connectivity, kind of say, oh, that's too gibberish already. They are connected to different or to distinct part of the brain, and they are so. How can I go out of that? Basically, distinct region of the brain talk to distinct other part of the brain. It's kind of specific.
So does the type of signal tell you which one
they're
talking to each other?
Yeah.
So if you see the shape in green box,
if you see it in
then
green,
you know that
then you will get the green, these green chunks. But if you see it in the blue, you will only get the blue. And there might be overlap, but there is some specificity in this kind of functional connectivity. And if you do that in the animals, in the monkey. So here we put our seed in the region where we observe the gray matter changes. Here is the signal from that region. And here are the regions that are correlated with this temporal region. And not only we observe some correlation between this temporal region and the rest of the brain, but in some case, we observe the modulation of this correlation in relation to the network size. So for instance, in this medial prefrontal cortex region where the Chinese group were recordings. So basically, the bigger your social groups, the more correlation you will find between this orange region and this blue region. Yeah, I think it's time to kind of conclude here. So what our experiments show is that the social environment
affect neural circuits. So you could induce plasticity in the brain, even in an adult brain in macaque. This effect might be mediated by changing in synaptic strength, and the region sensitive to changes of in the macaque brains are homologous to regions that are part of the social brain in humans. So, for instance, here is the anterior prefrontal cortex in the macaque, and this is one region that is part of the social brain in the humans. You've got the anterior temporal cortex, and here you've got the anterior temporal cortex in the macaque, and then the STS, and here you've got the STS in the macaque. So here you've got the platforms to go from a kind of primitive social brain, because the social ability of the monkey are different than ours. But here you've got the platform to go from. You've got the basic to go to here.
Right.
Thank you.
We'll take a break for a few minutes, and then my helpers will come around with food, drink, and a hat. And maybe you want to leave your diagrams up. I'm sure somebody will come.
Just take 30 seconds. Maybe after the break. After the break, is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.